Accession number 28676, Mr. Jack Ball, Real 8. Now, we were looking at a typical, not a specific night raid made while you were with your squadron. We'd got to the point where you're approaching the target under the control of your bomb aimer. So what happens next then? I'm presuming it's the dropping the bombs. What would happen?
There's quite a big lift when it when the bombs go away. Particularly if it's a Cookie, which is a 4,000 pounder.
So the aircraft would rise.
The aircraft rises, yeah.
Would there be a photograph taken?
There'd be a photograph taken at that time of the... one of the duties of the wireless operator was to go back up the fuselage with a broom handle, a short length of broom handle, and make sure the photo flash goes, because the photo flash was a big tube in the and about 6 foot long, as I remember it anyway. It was a noticeable feature of the rear fuselage, so he had to make sure it went, and he went up there on a portable oxygen bottle, which was pretty worrying really for him, I think, particularly as he was a nervy guy.
And that would take a picture, a picture.
That would provide the light for a picture, which your cameras would take. But also, you had a certainly in the later raids, you had a camera clamped to the H2S, which gave you a more or less a photograph of the ground area we were covering.
And this would be for later interpretation as to where you'd actually drop the bombs.
That's right. Yeah.
And I suppose, cruelly putting it, that you'd been over the target, that you'd actually done your mission.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Because I think there were, I'm going back to the early days now, when I was at home on Spalding Moor, on the back course, on the beam course, there was rumours around that some of the guys were just going over to the North Sea and circling, wasting their time, dropping their bombs in the sea. Well, I don't know how true that is. It seemed pretty unlikely to me. But
now, would you carry on in a straight line for long after you take it?
No, once you were through the target, it was noticeable that every aircraft disappeared. You went through, and you had to keep a very close lookout for other aircraft, of course, and particularly those above you. But once you were through the target, everybody put the nose down, I think, and headed for home. And it was amazing that you... I ran into some targets on daylight ops where there were plenty of aircraft around. But once you were through, you were by yourself.
Now, was the flight home any different? Or, I mean, would you keep up your guard? Or well, not yours, but, I mean, would everybody...
Yeah, you'd expect the gunners to be on their guard over the... occupied territories or Germany, and it wasn't until you got to the Channel or North Sea that North Sea English coast that you could relax, I think.
One thing I've forgotten, intercom drill and behaviour, because some captains didn't allow people to use the intercom, barely at all.
That's right.
Some were pretty...
I was pretty nasty on it. I kept pretty firm discipline on the...
So what could they and couldn't they use it for?
Well, you couldn't use it for chat. I mean, it was only a sort of messages generally that were pertinent to the operation.
Was that the majority of pilots, do you think, or was it just...
I've no idea. It was just such an individual thing, really. Well, if we were on a cross country, I'd sing to them, you know, which even worse, I should think. In general, it was reduced to pertinent messages.
I presume there was also wireless silence as well. I mean, external wireless. I mean, yeah. You know, the wireless operator. Was there a wireless silence, or would that ever be used?
Yeah, there was wireless silence, and I think he had a message to get away when the bombs were dropped, sort of target attacked, something like that. And of course, he would listen out for any diversions or particular information that we ought to have.
Now, you're flying back. Those are both dropped in, rather. I should have picked them up earlier. But now, when you're getting close to home, there's no beam. You haven't got beam approach equipment on.
No.
Mm-hmm. So what's the sort of approach to home and landing procedure?
Once you cross the coast, you looked out for the two blue searchlights that were pointing straight up at Kelston. If the weather was grim, then you probably wouldn't see them, but that was the final identifying point. You would rely on your navigator to get you home, quite frankly.
And what about landing? Any particular order or checks you had to make before you landed? I presume there could be several aircraft in the area thinking about
landing.
Oh,
yeah.
32 or more, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. There was. It was. You had to keep your wits about you. I can't remember where we switched the navigation lights on or not. Probably not, because there were always the danger of intruders.
You were aware of that danger?
Yeah, yeah, sure. And our airplanes, our aerodrome had been attacked on occasions.
And not while you were there, or?
I don't recall it being attacked while I was there, but shortly afterwards, certainly it was. You know, they lost aircraft.
So what's the next part of the procedure of landing?
After landing, we would report anything to the ground staff, who'd take notes, anything wrong with the aircraft or any damage. Then we would proceed to debriefing.
Now, what would happen there?
Interrogation, or whatever they called it. That was, we'd be given a glass of rum, or enamel mug of rum, I guess, tiny drop. And
was that welcome, or I mean?
Oh, very welcome. Yeah, sure.
Did you like rum, or was it just?
I probably had a taste for rum by then, but it was neat, and well, as far as I knew, it was neat.
So it's a fair measure, more than a pub measure, it sounds like.
It was in the bottom of the enamel mug.
So not too much.
I don't think it was pouring out of it. No, it wasn't too much, certainly. No. I was grateful for anybody who was teetotal, quite frankly. I think there were one or two teetotalers around.
So you were willing to have two?
I was willing to have two, yeah. And I think there were some people who would drink as much as they could. But they interrogated us as a crew.
Looking for what? Things going outside the aircraft, or were they interested in individual performances within the aircraft?
Oh, no. They never asked me about individual performances within the aircraft. They it was outside the aircraft and what we had experienced, etc. Any defensive things that we'd come across. It was a bit of a bind, actually. He wanted to get to bed, quite frankly. And sometimes, I can remember one occasion where they took us all through the fog in a coach to where we could be interrogated, you know, which I'd have thought, quite frankly, the interrogators should have come to us on that occasion. But they didn't.
And that was it, bed, I presume.
Yeah, bed, generally, yeah. And then after night radio.
Now, that's a typical raid, but now, if we just have a quick look at, we'll look at some of the raids you were on. This probably is for you to
yeah.
look at the things. If there's any incident that records you, I mean, I think that was the first one, the page is on.
Yeah. Oh, that was the first one, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Now, anything that comes to mind about any of those particular raids or targets that you remember?
Well, I was very worried about Flight Lieutenant Avery on the second dickey job I did, because he put glasses on. I thought, well, if he can't see, I can't see. Where are we going? On the Icon Horse raid, which was on the 17th of my first really solo raid.
Now, where was this on?
That was on the 17th of September on Icon Horse Rocket Storage.
That's there. A daylight raid, perverse. I mean, what was that?
Oh, yeah, that was a daylight raid. The thing I remember, we bombed from 10,000 feet, which was low from our point of view, and was confined generally to nearer targets where accuracy was demanded. This was in Holland, actually, Eikenhorst. And the thing I remember about that is on the way there, crossing the Channel or North Sea, I thought the glint of the window was tracer bullets coming in my direction. But I was disabused of this idea when a brown paper parcel came past me. And, you know, the bloke had obviously thrown it out. He wasn't bothered about imitating flights of aircraft. He was just getting rid of the stuff. It just came tumbling towards me.
That was the window, was it?
No, there was a bundle of window, yeah, a parcel of window. It was. He obviously got fed up with it. It was in his way, I guess.
Anything else happened on that Icon Horse raid?
No, it was fairly straightforward. It was just the fact that it was my first solo one.
Can I ask about the use of... We forgot that in the dive raid. When would you and how would you use window?
It was supposed to be stuffed out through the bomb aimer's hole in the fuselage.
And when would that be done? In what
it circuit? Would be done all the way from crossing the Channel to, or crossing the North Sea, to all the way to the target.
So and what was it meant to do?
It was meant to... confuse the enemy radar, and really, I understand it produced so much chatter on the radar that he couldn't distinguish one aircraft from another. So we religiously tossed it out.
Now, what's the next raid you remember? I mean,
The Dusseldorf one I don't recall particularly. Then we had three raids on Calais.
All daylight from the look of them.
They were all daylight. Yeah, sure.
And what were these raids like? Are these? What dates are they?
They were September the 25th, 26th, and 27th. They were against gun positions in Calais, pillboxes, etc.
And what were those raids like? Anything special about them? Or
The first one, we were told to take our bombs back. There was a master bomber there. And he instructed us to take our bombs back.
Why?
Because he couldn't see the we couldn't see the cloud, the ground because of the cloud. There wasn't a lot of opposition on these, quite frankly. The exciting thing was that taking the bombs back really was sort of new to us.
Would you actually take them back and land them, or would you drop them over the sea?
No, we'd take them back.
Can you comment a bit on the role of the master bomber? I mean, we've not mentioned him before. What did they do?
Well, we didn't always have one. Clearly, he was supposed to direct the raid, call it off if the weather conditions were wrong. I don't think he would call it off on a distant target, but Calais was obviously a special case. He was overall command of the operation, but as I say, generally we didn't hear from him, or I don't remember hearing from him. And that's why I made a particular note of this one. Because the first guy back was the bloke who smoked two cigarettes at a time, and he went through the he landed with his wheels up for some reason or other and went through the fence. So the runway was blocked for us, the rest of us, and we had to wait around. But normally I found that I made excellent landings when the bombs were on board, because there were several occasions when we had to land with the bombs, and it was always a smooth landing, I found. Whether that was due to the bombs being on board or not, or the weight of the aircraft, I don't know, but it was always smooth.
So what's the next raid you remember, or next incident from a raid? You don't remember them all now.
No. The next one I remember is Emmerich on the...
How do you spell that?
E-double-M-E-R-I-C-H. It was a twin town of Cleve. Cleve was, in Holland, was across the... slightly to the right of it. And... There were about 250 of us attacking this.
And what date was that?
This was October the 7th, which was my mother's birthday, I always remember.
And what happened on this? Why do you remember that one so well?
Well, there was a tremendous... It was a beautiful day. It was a Saturday, as I remember. And clear sky. I figured...
Was it a daytime raid, then?
It was a daytime raid. And... the flak was very accurate, but there was a tremendous column of smoke and dust from Cleve, which the Halifaxes were attacking, about 250 of them. And we were all Lancasters going in on Emmerich. And I remember thinking, it was such a beautiful day, you know, everybody at home would be going on to football matches or whatever, they were out shopping. And here we were, preparing to blow the hell out of some Dutch town that was holding up the American advance, I think.
Did Did civilian casualties, well, they're Dutch civilian casualties, you might pick up.
Yeah.
Did civilian casualties worry you? I mean, what was your sort of attitude? I know it's a bit of a devil's advocate question,
but
there are reasons for the bomber command raid.
Sure.
But on the other hand, you are killing civilians whilst you're at it. How did you feel about it, really?
Well, I was grateful for being up above, quite frankly, first thing. Secondly, I didn't feel too badly because my own village had been bombed at home, and although the raids had finished then, but we'd been through it, I regretted it, the civilian particularly, but it had to be done because to get the blood and strife finished in Europe, the Germans had been so horrible. Well, the Dutch, I never liked bombing French or Dutch targets, quite frankly, in that respect. And even on German targets, they frequently had, if you look at the casualty figures, there's quite a number of foreign workers who were killed, who were friendly fellow allies. They all seem to be placed in the way of danger. In fact, I remember one where, can I digress?
Hmm? Yeah, of course.
A particular raid where at briefing we were told that there was a prisoner of war camp just in front of the target. And I told the bomb aimer to give it an extra second. And I've always regretted it because it was made the whole thing pointless, really, because we hit a ploughed field, I think, I think there was an eyebrow or two raised at the debriefing.
Now, so that's Emmerich, that's a Dutch town.
Yes, that was Emmerich, yeah.
What's the next? That's 7th of October. Any of
this? Yeah. Well, the 14th of October, we were called from our beds at about 3 in the morning for briefing to go to Duisburg.
To where?
Duisburg. Duisburg.
And that's...
It was at Thyssen Steelworks.
Is that Holland as well?
No, that was Germany. That was in the Ruhr, yeah.
Now, what was that? So that was still, was that a night raid or a morning raid?
That was a morning raid. That was an early morning raid. I forget what time we took off. If I could find the battle orders, I'd tell you. But we were going to the Thyssen Steelworks. It was daylight, and it was a pretty concentrated attack. On the way out, we... had our starboard engine, inner engine, hit.
What by?
A fragment of shell, I guess.
Just anti flak?
Yeah, flak. It was flak damage. And it started streaming glycol, so I shut it down. And
did that affect the flying? Pattern, you just have three engines, I presume, then?
Yeah, they flew very well on three engines.
So it wasn't noticeably unbalanced or too unbalanced?
Yeah, it was unbalanced, but it was controllable, it was fine, quite frankly. We did a lot of three-engine flying one time or another in practice, etc. But on return to the airfield, they told us we were going out again on the same day or the same night. So we went out, it was always known as a double Duisburg. We went out early evening, I think. And I was the last to take off because they had to change the engine. And they told me, at least they told me a couple of reunions ago that it was a record change. You know, the time they took and changing the engine. And I took off late. I was the last one off. So I wasn't particularly happy on that respect, but...
Anything happened on the second raid, the night raids?
I don't know, I can't remember it. Oh, yes, on the takeoff, that's the 14th of October, wasn't it?
That's what you said, yeah.
Yeah. When I was turning onto the runway, the aircraft in front of me took off, and I turned onto the runway. And then there was this tremendous explosion at the far end of the, seemed to be at the far end of the runway, and clearly he'd gone in. And it was a young Canadian pilot. He'd lost an engine on takeoff, which is something we all feared. And unable to control it, and he crashed about a mile past the runway and at Little Grimsby, which I went to a dedication to a chapel there that an old chapel that in private grounds that
so if an engine failed on takeoff, that would be uncontrollable, or could be.
Yeah, it could be. If you hadn't got flying speed, three-engine flying speed, it would certainly be uncontrollable. It depends on what stage it failed. And he had a couple of... I think the bomb aimer bailed out. And the flight engineer probably bailed out as well. I think there'd be two escape from the aircraft, but at very low level, they wouldn't.
And would the bombs detonate? Is that where the flash is, or was that just a fuel?
There was tremendous explosion, and bombs, and the whole lot went up, and it made a big hole in the ground. You know, in fact, it was like a small quarry. Quite frankly, I looked at it later on, many years later.
Were you suffering many casualties? I mean, if that's all you remember about the 14th, the second raid.
Yeah, that's right. It was a day full of incident, of course, with two raids, and it was exceptional in that respect. When I came in to land, because I was late back, I was asked to clear the runway because there was an aircraft in trouble behind me. It turned out to be a Wellington of the Polish squadron, which crashed on the runway and burst into flames. And they all got out, I think. There's no mention of this in the squadron records, but it certainly happened. And I'd be under doubt whether it had actually happened or whether I'd dreamt it, you know, because you sometimes think you dream these things. And but it was mentioned in a book I read. It's somebody's reminiscences. New Zealand bomb aimer's reminiscences of, and he refers to this crash. So I was reassured by that.